And if you're thinking about coming into the rooms, come in, get a big book, get somebody who knows what the big book is, go through the work, don't get caught up in all the crap, and go have an amazing experience, and then go make a beautiful mess, because now you have the means to clean it up.
Well, hello, friends of Bill W. and other friends. You have landed on Sober Speak. My name is John M. I am an alcoholic, and we are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. Newcomers, that is, both to recovery as a whole and newcomers to this podcast. Sober Speak is a podcast about recovery centered around the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My job here on Sober Speak is simple. My job is to provide a platform to the amazing stories of recovery all around us. Consider Sober Speak, if you will, your meeting between meetings. Please remember, we do not speak for AA or any 12-step community. We represent only ourselves. We are here to share our experience, strength, and hope with those who wish to come along for the ride. Take what you want and leave the rest at the curb for the trash man to pick up. Greetings from Lil Ginge here in Studio AA, deep in the heart of Texas. That was the voice of Miss Beth B. You heard at the beginning of this episode, and you're going to hear so much more from her in un momento on this her episode number 338 of Sober Speak. But first things first, this episode is made possible by Kate, David, Marie, Adrian, and Michelle. What, you may ask, did Kate, David, Marie, Adrian, and Michelle do? Well, they went to our humble little website, www.soberspeak.com. They clicked on the little yellow donate tab at the bottom of the page, and they made a contribution. So thank you so much, Kate, David, Marie, Adrian, and Michelle. This here episode is coming right out to Ewan's. As a reminder, no need to contribute. God has this all in his hands. If and only if the Spirit moves you, go on and find that donate button. If not, I am just so glad you're here listening to us. If you're joining us for the first time and you're thinking, well, I bet they're just going to talk about alcohol. Nothing but alcohol on this podcast. Well, we don't just talk about alcohol. We talk about alcohol, alcoholism, and other things as well. But we talk about so many other things. We talk about adversity. We talk about hope. We talk about the human spirit. We talk about when people fail. It's just a lot of stories of people that are in recovery and everything that they go for. Sometimes we hardly talk about alcohol at all on an episode, but nonetheless, we are glad that you have joined us. So I was perusing through the little super secret Facebook group. If you're not on that, go to your Facebook application and look up Sober Speak Secret Group and ask for admission into the group, and we will get you on in. But anyway, a longtime supporter of the pod here, his name is Todd. Todd with one D, I might add, posted something. It was short and sweet and to the point in the Facebook group. It was actually it wasn't a post. I think it was a comment on somebody else's post. But it really caught my attention, and I want to read it to you guys. It just said, if I'm not praying about it, there's a good chance I'm not on the right track. And I love that. Let me say that again. If I'm not praying about it, there's a good chance I'm not on the right track. And you know, I generally speaking am not, consciously saying to myself, I'm not going to pray about that issue, whatever it may be. But subconsciously, I just start solving it on my own. And I don't think about bringing God into the picture. And so it gave me pause to a couple of different things going on in my life. And I said to myself, self, why aren't you praying about that more as opposed to, quote, trying to figure it out, unquote, right? Thanks, Todd, for posting that in there. Now, on to our featured guest of the week. This is Beth B. Beth B. from Westfield, New Jersey. And this one we're calling A Beautiful Mess. I absolutely loved this interview. It was a truly wide-ranging discussion with Beth. Beth's Day of Grace, as she calls it, was August 22nd of 1991. We discuss on this episode the Jersey Shore, both the place and the TV show, not because Beth brought it up, it's because I'm such a doofus and I brought it up. I just thought, hey, we'll go there. We discuss Beth getting sober at a young age and what that was like. We discuss Beth meeting her sponsor, Cass, at 6.5 years sober and how that was a turning point in her sobriety, her conversion to Judaism and that experience and what it entailed, the realization that Beth had what she called been living out in a self-protection mode and how that limited her and what that meant to her, a self-protection mode. I love how she put that. That's a really great way to phrase it. We discuss her belief that things need to be fixed as opposed to replaced when possible, at least in relationships. Parenting two kids and what she and her kids have learned through her journey of long-term recovery and much, much more. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I present to you Beth B. And we will have plenty of listener feedback at the end of this episode. Enjoy. Okay, everybody. So today we're sitting here with Miss Beth B. Beth B. I'm sorry. I just got a little stuck on that. But anyway, Beth, I am going to go ahead. It's actually Beth BB or something, isn't it? Am I right about that?
It is. B, triple B.
Oh, my goodness. Beth BB. Anyway, so we're here with Beth B. And Beth B, I'm going to go ahead and have you introduce yourself, give your sobriety date if you wish, and tell people where you live in this great land of ours, if you will, please.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Beth. I am an alcoholic. My day of grace is August 22nd, 1991, and I get to live in a wonderful little town called Westfield, New Jersey.
Westfield, New Jersey. So as you know, we met each other through the one, the only Mr. Chris S. How do you know? Is that close to Blairstown, which is where he lives?
Oh, no. Chris and I have known each other for 23 years, 24 years. I wandered into one of his meetings with a bunch of young people, friends of mine at the time, and he was doing big book studies, and we were on board, and we've been friends ever since.
Wow. Okay. So, what town is that again you're in? I'm sorry, I didn't write it down.
That's okay. I'm in Westfield, New Jersey, but we wandered into, this was 23, 24 years ago. We wandered into his meeting in Bernardsville, his Tuesday night big book study.
Gotcha. Yeah. He's a great guy. He's been on Yeah.
He's awesome.
He is fantastic. He's got all kinds of content. He's been on the pod here, as we call it, many, many times. So anyway.
Very cool.
All right, so you're in New Jersey. Did you grow up in New Jersey?
Pretty much. I was born in New York and moved out to New Jersey. I think I was 6, 7, 8 years old. Don't really remember.
Do you go down to the Jersey Shore very much? I'm sorry. That's such a...
Every summer.
Really?
Every summer. Yeah. My best friend has a house in Spring Lake and we go down for a week every summer.
So it is a thing there.
It is.
Do you see?
And I live off of exit 135 on the parkway.
Gotcha. I've been up and down that the parkway many, 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 many times, going from Philadelphia back up to New York and stuff like that.
So, yep.
Yeah. Do you see those kids from the, what is that thing on the MTV? Is that Jersey? I'm sorry.
Jersey Shore. And they're actually not from Jersey. They're from Staten Island.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Oh.
Well, that's a bummer. That throws me. I should study up on that more. But nonetheless.
Don't.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about. So you grew up in New Jersey. And then, so why don't you kind of give us a thumbnail sketch, just kind of a quick overview of up until the time you came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I know you're pretty young, so why don't you kind of set that up for us and let us know how you got there in the first place?
Sure. So I started drinking when I was very young. I had my first drink when I was like 5, and I remember it. I started drinking with intent and alcoholically in probably 4th or 5th grade. I wanted to be drunk my whole life. That's all I wanted. Tons and tons of trauma behind the substance use and the drinking. Other substances other than alcohol. And
let's back up there a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want you to go any place that you're not comfortable going. But when you say tons and tons of trauma, can you dive into that a little further?
So I think it's. I don't like making my trauma super, super public, but let's just say that I've been abused in my home in just about every way that a human can be abused. So, yeah, tough life growing up.
Yeah. Okay. And so you started drinking really early. And did that allow you some sort of escape? Yeah. Reprieve?
Yeah, it was just the drugs were all about the reprieve, the drinking. Once the drinking started, it was just drinking. Like I just drank to drink and I didn't have a choice. It did not take long for lack of choice to hit my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you're starting early, you're drinking, you're drugging, I've heard this many times, usually it's kind of fun on the beginning, then it turns fun post problems, and then it becomes problems. And I think that happened in a pretty rapid form for you. So what do you kind of condense that down for us?
Sure. So, the local police, there were state police, because I grew up in a small town. And they would drive me home, I would sleep in the woods, and I got kicked out of my house a couple of times, and I got kicked out of 3 different high schools, and I got put into a program, and I just kept drinking. There was just no not drinking, and then they put me in rehab, and I stayed sober for 3 days out of rehab, and then, at this point, I was 17, and this is the last 6 months of my drinking. There was nowhere left for me to go in Jersey, so I left the state, went to my grandparents' house in New Mexico, and there were no checks and balances at that point. There was there was no oversight of Beth, and I basically almost drank myself to death, drug myself to death, put myself in really bad situations. And one night, God was like, you're done. And I came home the next day. I called my mom and I borrowed $300 to get a plane ticket. And I came home and I haven't had a drink since.
Wow. Okay. So, wow, that happened quick. So,
pretty summed up.
Yeah. So, in New Mexico, you were living with your grandparents. You had no oversight there. And basically, it was just wheels off there. Right.
100% wheels off.
Okay. And so how did you get to Alcoholics Anonymous?
Well, I mean, I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous and treatment, right? Mm. So I was in an aftercare or an IOP. They call them IOP now. I was in that IOP for a total of, I think, a year and a half. And I was told to go to the Pyramid Club, that's where people went to meetings. And I was like, what is this Pyramid Club? And so when I finally got sober, I started going to meetings. I guess I actually went to meetings before. After I came out of rehab, I started going to meetings and then I would drink. I have more one day at a time chips from NA than I think anybody, the keychains. I mean, I don't have many more, but I'd pick one up a week. I'd be like, yeah, I drank. I'm going to drink after this meeting. So you might as well just give me another one. Let's, you know.
Okay. So when then, okay, so this is 17. Mm-hmm. And you're going in and out. And then apparently at one point, though, you decided it's going to... I don't know if you decided, God decided, if it was an accident.
I didn't decide.
Right.
I didn't decide. God was like, you're done. And basically plucked my ass out of New Mexico and plopped it back down in New Jersey and said, you don't drink anymore.
Gotcha.
It was the end of it.
And was there a particular time or point in that journey where it all of a sudden just started to make sense to you? Or do you remember like a day or a week, or was it just kind of over time?
What, stopping drinking?
Yeah.
No, it just happened. August 22nd, I came home. That was the last day. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. God was like, you're done. When did it all start to make sense? Like 6.5 years after that?
Ah.
You know, I went to meetings for 6 years and there was no big book. There was no big book studies. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. And 6.5 years later, I'm sitting in a meeting. I'm sitting in a conference, actually, and I wanted to drink and drive my car off an overpass. So it wasn't going well. And Cass came into my life and I asked her to help me. I didn't even ask her. She offered to help me. And I said, fine. And then I showed up at her house and she took me through the book. And that's when I started to actually get better.
Okay. What was her name? Kath?
Cass.
C-A-S-S?
Yep. Cass.
Cass came into your life. Is Cass still with us?
Yep. Cass is still my sponsor. 27
years later? Is that what you are now?
25 years later.
Okay, 25. Wow. Oh, well, 25 after when she started sponsoring you after you were 6 years sober, right?
Yeah, so it's 6.5. I had 6.5 years when she got me, and I have 32 now. So whatever that is, right. I don't know.
I understand.
I don't math.
So Cass took you aside. And so tell me about that. How did that relationship, I mean, I hear how it began, but what happened from that point forward and what was different about her? And had you had other sponsors before that?
Yeah. I mean, I've always had a sponsor, a sponsor in name only. My first sponsor I'm actually still in touch with. And, it's interesting because, she's a really good person. She's down in Florida and we still see, she came up and visited after I had kids. And, it's good to be in touch with her. But Cass was really the first person to take me through the book, and not to say that my first sponsor wouldn't have. I couldn't read when I got sober. I couldn't comprehend. I shook for at least 2 years. I learned how to drink coffee out of a styrofoam cup with a straw because I couldn't hold a cup of coffee. I was like a crazy person. But Cass, I just showed up at her house every week at the same time. And this is before the internet. This is before cell phones. Anybody that knows me knows I still get lost in a paper bag. I've been in Westfield for over 10 years and I still can't remember if Bagel Chateau is on North Ave or South Ave. But for some reason, I showed up at her house in the middle of Sussex County nowhere, which is like the woods here in New Jersey. Every week I showed up and she read the book and we looked things up and we wrote things down. And when it said pray, pray, and we prayed. And when it said write, I wrote. And when I got stuck, she sat me at her dining room table. staring at the meatballs on the stove and said I couldn't eat until I was done writing. And, you know, I got through the work. And, you know, it's useless to describe what it's like to go through the work. And it's useless to describe how I felt, because everybody needs to have their own experience with this work. Every single time I've gone through the work since, it's been different. It's the same work. Mm-hmm. And every single time, it's a completely different experience. It's a completely different... I go through with a different woman every time. I think I've been through 4, 5, 6 times, all with different women. It's been, you know, getting the opportunity to go through the book with somebody is... But somebody who's going to allow you to have your own experience with it is the biggest gift I've ever been given. And it's the biggest gift I can ever give somebody else. So yeah, Cass took me through the work. I did all of my direct amends. And my life has never needed to start over ever again.
I do want to go back to the when you were younger, just real quick, before you met Cass up at, I guess, you know, it's like 20, 23, 24, something like that. But were you still in high school? Were you going to school? I mean, what was going on at that time? How did you navigate that period?
So my parents kicked me out when I did get sober. So I was homeless. And I did finish my senior year.
Real quick on that question. So you said they kicked you out when you got sober. What was the dynamic there? It would seem...
Honestly, it was sick. It was a sick family. It was an incredibly sick atmosphere. And, you know, my parents were also getting divorced when I got sober. And, you know, my dad had a restraining order on me. And my mom got child support because I was 17, but I wasn't allowed to live with her. I don't even know how that all worked. But I went to school. And at the end of my senior year, the administration stepped in and said, you only showed up like 4 days a week all year, which I thought was pretty impressive. and I didn't graduate and I didn't finish my high school diploma until I was 26. I went back and got an adult high school diploma.
Yeah. The GED, I think is what they're called, right?
No, it's actually an adult high school.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yep. There's a difference. Like you go to class every day and every night. Whereas the GED, you just sit and take a test. I have severe learning disabilities, so the GED wasn't an option for me. I wouldn't have passed.
Gotcha.
And so I'm really lucky there was an adult high school.
Right. Oh, that's great.
In New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And so during that time, were you working like odd jobs and stuff like that to support yourself?
Yep. Sometimes I had car insurance. Sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I lived at, you know, I would rent a room for a couple of months if I had like a steady job. I went to 14 meetings a week and I actually lived with my first sponsor for almost a year. But I never had a home. I was essentially like, people would be like, what's your address to on like applications?
Hi.
And I didn't have one.
Yeah.
I didn't have an address.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. And maybe we're going to get to this later, but just while we're here, were you able to reconcile with your family? How did all that play out?
So, I didn't really reconcile with my family. I'm so sorry.
You're fine.
I actually reconciled with my dad when I went through the work with Cass. I reconciled with my mom before that, but after I went through the work with Cass, I actually went no contact with my mom, and then I got married and pregnant, and me and my husband decided that we were going to allow her to have a relationship with her grandchild.
And how old were you when this happened?
Oh, God, I was 31.
Gotcha.
Maybe I was 30. I think I was 31.
Okay, early 30s.
And, and then
We were in contact with her on and off until my daughter was born, and she came for Christmas. And after that, you know, the way that that happened, the way that it went down, I had a conversation with my stepdad, and I was like, we're done. This is not okay. And we decided that we were better off apologizing to our children than letting them go through the trauma that I did with a sick woman.
Right.
So, you know, going through the work, I wound up having a really great relationship with my dad. He passed away right before we had kids. Literally, like 2 months, 3 months before I got pregnant with my son. He passed away, like, suddenly. But there was nothing left unsaid, and there was no resentment. All amends had been made. Funny, I am the youngest of three. I'm the only one he would listen to. You know, it's so crazy. I actually got to hear all the things a daughter from a damaged family wants to hear as an adult. You know, one day I was over his house. He would have Sunday dinners, very, very Italian. And I was walking through the living room, and he just stops and, like, holds both of my shoulders. And he was like, have I told you I'm proud of you? And everybody in the room, like, this was not something my dad did. And I was like, no. And he was like, well, I am. I'm really proud of you. Like, you've really made something of your life. I was like, oh, thanks. And my brothers were both pissed because they didn't say anything to them. I got food poisoning one night that I was at his house. I ate like an entire can of black olives because I love black olives, or I did. Wound up getting food poisoning. So I stayed. My husband was my fiance at the time. He went home and left me there, and I just laid on the couch, tried not to move. And my dad was, like, addicted to playing this game on his computer, Risk, and he had a computer version, which me and my husband bought for him, and he got so addicted to it. And he was in the dining room, and I was in the living room, and out of nowhere, I'm, like, laying there the next day, like, just trying to recover, and he out of nowhere, he goes, was I really that rough on you guys when you were kids? And I was, like, I was in shock, because it's not something we ever talked about. And I just sat there shocked for a minute or two. And then I was like, yeah, Dad, you were pretty rough on all of us. And he apologized, and he said he was sorry, and that he didn't realize how bad it was. And then lucky for me, I actually converted to Judaism, on my 22nd sober anniversary. So what, 10 years ago? And my mother-in-law wanted me to convert. My husband's Jewish. My mother-in-law wanted me to convert to get married. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But I considered it. And I remember going and talking to my dad about it and saying, if I decide to do this, is this something you are okay with? And he said, you have more God in your life than anybody I've ever met in a church. So you do what you need to do, and you totally have my blessing.
Mm.
And I didn't convert when we got married. I'm not a religious person. I actually, it would have been easier had I converted before I had kids, because I had to convert both of my kids. But I converted on my own. And I don't know, just knowing that he was cool with it. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm very, very lucky to have had the time I had with my dad. I just wish I had had more.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. So you mentioned your husband and conversion there, and all that's fantastic. That's really cool. So talk to me about, like, relationships throughout your sobriety, what you've experienced there. You still married to the same guy? What's going on there?
I am. My husband and I have been married for 22 years.
Wow.
When I went through the book with Cass, I I basically went through friendships my whole life. And I was within a cast of friends when Cass came into my life. And Cass used to tell us all the time that sobriety is all about relationships. Relationship with myself, a relationship with God, and then a relationship with others.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things she said, one of the first meetings that we had, when even before we opened the book, she said, if I take you through this book, the one thing you must do is sponsor people. And I was like, yeah, I don't sponsor people. I'm horrible at sponsorship. I'm horrible at people. I'm horrible. Like, I don't like people. And she just laughed at me, which she's really good at doing. And as we went through the work, I was forced to examine why I didn't have relationships in my life. And it all came down to self-protection, right? So when we're going through step two and we're really looking at our old ideas, right? It says in the book that we need to challenge these old ideas. And the way that Cass brought it to me was, you've been making decisions based on ideas that you don't even know if you believe anymore or not. And my old ideas were that people were bad, that people hurt you, that people abuse you, that people take advantage of you, that people are only nice to you so that they can get you vulnerable, so that they can beat you up. And when I challenged all of that, and I'm really grateful I had 6.5 years when I did the work, because that had not been my experience with the people I had met in AA, most of the people. There are tons of jerk-offs in AA. I mean, we are alcoholics. and there's a ton of really bad people, but there's a lot of good. And I am very grateful to all the people that were good to me, because it helped me change the way I believed. And once I realized that I no longer had to make decisions about relationships based on what I thought I knew, I could base decisions on relationships in the present moment based solely on the connection I had with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And the girlfriends that I had when I went through the book are still my closest friends today. I've made new friends, and I've lost two since I went through the book at 6.5 years sober.
Very interesting.
Right? I'm still not a super social person. I don't let a lot of people in. A lot of people see me as being super nice and friendly and will listen to anybody at any time, help anybody at any time. But there are very few that I will let into my inner circle. But once you're in, like, that's kind of it. Like, I believe that things should be fixed instead of replaced. And I think it's a concept that's kind of coming back with Gen Z.
Yeah, so help me with that, I guess. So you think that things should be fixed rather than replaced. What do you mean by that?
So I can't even tell you how many women have come up to me and said, with time, and said, would you sponsor me? And I would say, do you currently have a sponsor? And they say yes. And I say, what's wrong with your sponsor? We had a fight. We're not getting along. She doesn't understand me. Our lives are too different. None of these things are valid reasons for taking somebody out of your life and getting a new one. If sobriety is all about relationships, then we need to learn the twists and turns of maintaining our autonomy while bending ourselves to maintain a relationship with somebody in our life. Me and my sponsor, dude, my sponsor's like 80 something years old. Like, I mean, we're kind of sponsoring her at this point, but we don't have a lot in common. Like, we're in totally different phases of our lives the whole time we've been in this relationship. We have totally different morals. And yet I trust her with my life.
That's interesting. You say you have different morals. I don't want you to go into like, what can you give me an example of what you mean? Okay, I won't. That's fine.
Right? You can't, you really can't. But it's like, my sponsor was the one that told me this is not a moral program. This program will bring you to a place where you will be able to form morals and values. But there's nothing in the program about morals and values that you have to follow. And if we are in constant service and non-judgment of others, then it doesn't matter what her morals are, as long as they're not imposed on me and vice versa. So as we grow and we change in this world, there's no reason why we can't continue friendships. And I'll be completely honest with you, there are phase of life friends that come and go, and that's no problem, but the people that we feel spiritually tied to, the people that we feel and trust with our sobriety, which is God-given, why would you get you know what I mean? Like, why would you replace that? Like, when my husband and I have issues, and I'm not saying that I'm not pro-divorce, I'm 100% pro whatever you need to do for you. I love my husband. And so I continue to do everything I need to do to maintain a relationship with him. All I really do believe in the song, like, all you need is love, right? We have very different lifestyles. Like, he is like exercise maniac. Like, he does Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He's about to test for his purple belt, which he should have done 2 years ago. He does CrossFit literally like every freaking day. And I sew and I quilt and I garden. Like, we don't, do you know what I mean? We've been through the ringer. We almost got divorced when my kids were very young, and we decided to fix what we had because love was there. And I just think that, and I'm seeing this more now with Gen Z in our culture, where it's just really holding on to what matters and understanding what really matters. It's something that we get to learn in recovery.
Yeah.
Right? It's part of emotional sobriety.
Talk to me a little bit about parenting and what you've learned about parenting throughout sobriety. How many kids do you have again?
I have two kids.
Two?
Excuse me.
That's okay.
I have.
You've been, and people don't know this, but when we first started, you were on the couch by your cat tree, I think is what you call it, right? With all the cats going up and down. And then, I don't know, you've been very mobile during this entire process. You got up, you went to the kitchen. I think it was the kitchen. I don't know what you were doing.
Yeah, I had to get some seltzer.
Get some.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I'm all over the place.
Yes.
I'm all over the place. I actually did a podcast. I actually do a podcast. So I was doing a podcast earlier today, and we were talking about this podcast. So,
Wow, very cool.
Yeah. Friends in Recovery. It's great. We do it every week, and it's about, you know, a lot of the same stuff we're talking about now, which we do little topics and stuff, and it's just been such a delight.
Good. So it's called Friends in Recovery.
Yep. Friends in Recovery with Jersey Ed.
That's great.
Who lives in South Carolina? I have to talk to him about that, I guess. I don't know.
And so here's the other. Okay, so I want to get back to the parenting, right?
Okay.
But I also wanted to, like, while we're on this subject, I happen to know that you're in the recovery field, if you will, right? Right? So
yes.
When did you get into the recovery field?
So I actually started in 1998. I was a primary counselor on an inpatient adolescent substance use program unit.
Okay.
And then I got pregnant. I had kids, and I came back to work as a treatment placement specialist, basically. And that's what I do now.
Great. So... and so if anybody's looking for a treat, you know, I don't endorse or, you know, whatever, but if you want to reach out to me, John, JOHN, at SoberSpeak.com, and you're looking for a treatment specialist, a placement specialist, I can refer you over to BBB.
Yeah, I work with eating disorders, mental health disorders, substance use disorders, co-occurring, kids, adult, geriatric, veterans, first responders. Like, I've been doing this a long time, so I know a lot of places.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yes. It's good for folks to have a resource. All right, so let's get back to the parenting. So you are a parent of two kids.
I do. I have a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old, and everybody is still alive. We're as shocked as everybody who knows us. And parenting has been a freaking trip. I remember my first sponsor, like I said this earlier, my very first sponsor came and visited me when we lived in Charlotte, North Carolina for 7 years so that I could be a stay-at-home mom. And so she came up and stayed for a couple of days. And, you know, my daughter, who her name was Morgan, now it's Violet, so she changed her name. But at the time it was Morgan. And she had done something wrong and she got in trouble and I put her in timeout. And afterwards, I was like, so why did you go in timeout? And you know what I mean? Like, we just went through the whole parenting thing. And my sponsor, like, my old sponsor, Jeannie, she literally, she's like, you just did steps 4 through 9 with your daughter. Like, she's, it was right. Really funny. I feel very lucky that I have a program. You know, my daughter actually had a really rough day this week. And both my husband's also in recovery, and we both were just, you know, took a step back. We had a meeting. She got taken out of one program, put in another. She was very upset about the whole thing. And I was very upset. And so I get off the phone, and we told her, do you want to come home? We live across the street from the high school, so I'm like, you can walk home. So she walks home, and in the in-between, I called my best friend, Anne-Marie, and I told her what happened and how I was feeling, because I needed to process this so that when she walked in the door, I didn't make it about me, that it was about her.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, my daughter is way more resilient than I will ever be. I was devastated. She was upset. She walks in, and she's like, well, it's actually better this way, and I can do this, and I can do that, and is she upset? Yeah, she's upset about the shift, but she's immediately going to the solution. And I equate that. I'm not taking credit for it, but I do equate it to the fact that that's what she sees us do. She sees us deal with difficult situations. We're an open and honest family because we can be. There's nothing to hide here. And she sees us, bad things happen and we respond instead of react. And it's so interesting to watch them on their own start to do things that we learned in recovery. It's amazing that your kids are watching. Like, if you're a parent and you're listening to this, know that your kids are watching. And it's not to put anybody on the spot, but give yourself some credit, because if you're trying and you're really trying to work a program and you're really trying to do the next right thing and you're trying to shift into the person you want to be instead of the person that you used to be, like, your kids are seeing that. And it's such an amazing gift that, I mean, my kids are older now, right? They're, you know, all of my favorite parenting gurus say that you're done parenting by time they're 12. By time they're 12, they're done learning from you, and parents get dumber and dumber and dumber to the kids. And now they're 15 and 17, and I watch the way that they are with themselves, with their friends, with their school, with strangers. It's awe-inspiring to watch my kids react and act in life. Whether they turn out to be alcoholics or not, they have this ability that was learned, and it's in their core because they've been doing this since they were born. They've been raised in a home where we apologize for what we've done wrong. We forgive each other.
Right.
When somebody does us wrong, we help others. We are of service to others. My daughter was playing Roblox, which is like a kid's video game.
Yeah.
I think she was like 8. And she came to me and she asked me for Robux, which is like money inside the program. And I said, what do you need money for? And she said, I want to buy Robux. And I said, well, what do you need it for? She says, somebody came and told this little girl that they were going to help her. And she allowed them into her house or whatever. And they stole all of her stuff. Oh. And I don't think it's okay. And I want to give it all back to her. And I was like, let me know how much you need.
Right.
Take all the money. It's like Robux away. But that was her instinct. Her instinct was to help others.
Mm.
And people learn that, right? Like I think my kids were 4 or 5 when I realized that I was installing their buttons. Right? We're parents and we're going to piss our kids off. Sometimes it's just a lot of fun, but I'm like, I'm the same person I was when I was 5. I've had different experiences. I've grown a ton, but fundamentally I am the same person I was when I was 5. These people are just little people. It blows my mind how my entire old idea of children, right? I challenged the old idea of what is a child. And instead of saying they're not adults, I really started to believe that they are just little tiny adults gaining experience along the way. And I would not have ever seen that had I not worked this program.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, so let's start to wind it down. What I want you to do is to kind of think about it in this way. You have a lot of long-term sobriety. And I know that you've been able to learn all sorts of things along the way. And so my question really is, with the people that you are listening, the people who are listening out there, who may be thinking about coming into AA, or they may be thinking about sobriety, what would you say to them in terms of the lessons that you have learned along the way in regards to being sober and experiencing this way of life?
I get to choose everything in my life. Every choice I make creates the reality I live in, and I take that really seriously now. Every single day when I wake up, I strive for as much truth as I can so that I know what I'm getting myself into when I make choices that I'm going to have to live with. If you're thinking about coming into this program, like, come on in, man. Try it out. If you don't like it, you can go back to doing what you were doing.
That's right.
And I have to tell you, that concept has led me to every hobby I do, to every wild experience, to every crazy place I've driven to. You know what I mean? Like everything I do, I'm like, well, I'm going to try it. You know, my kids, they would try any food, because if they didn't like it, they just wouldn't eat it. And I've looked at my whole life like that. I couldn't do that before. There were all these made up rules. There were all these things inhibiting me because I'd have to stop drinking in order to do this stuff. So I don't do anything that's going to inhibit me doing anything. And if you're thinking about coming into the rooms, come in, get a big book, get somebody who knows what the big book is, go through the work, don't get caught up in all the crap, and go have an amazing experience, and then go make a beautiful mess, because now you have the means to clean it up.
Right. It is a beautiful mess, for sure. And that is exactly what happens. You do make a beautiful mess, and then you get to clean that up, but you learn a lot through the cleanup process and everything else. I love that.
There's no destination. Like, stop thinking you're going to get somewhere. You're not getting anywhere. None of us are getting out of here alive, okay?
Oh, Beth, well, I love it. I'm so glad that Chris introduced us. He guaranteed me that you would bring the heat, and you definitely did.
Yeah, Chris is my hero. I love Chris.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. All right. Well, listen, what I usually do, or what I'm going to do today as well, is we always end this with page 164 from Le Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. That's what we've been talking about at length today. Give freely of what you find and join us.
Join us.
That's what Beth just talked about. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us, like me and Beth, as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Once again, Beth, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you once again, Beth B., for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. God bless you. I hope our paths cross very soon. And as always, folks, remember, we don't want you sharing your toothbrush or your STD, but we would love for you to pause your device and share this episode with a friend or family member. It may be just what they need today. Now, on to a little bit of listener feedback. Okay, the first piece of feedback comes from our correspondent, our snail mail correspondent that we have out in the Tempe, Arizona area. And that is from Michael. Mike. Well, he goes by Mike, Michael. If you are out there in the Hitherlands, is that an actual word, the Hitherlands? Anyway, something tells me I'm getting that wrong. But nonetheless, and you either do not have the ability to email, or you just like to write letters. There's good old-fashioned snail mail, as we call it. Well, you can write on into Michael. Michael is at SoberSpeak, is the just address at SoberSpeak, 1962 East Apache Boulevard, P.O. Box 7925 in Tempe, Arizona. That's T-E-M-P-E, Arizona, 85281. And anyway, he writes in with an update and he says, hey, John, well, it's been a few weeks since I last checked in with you, but rest assured that the snail mail department is working. This week, we had a new person write in. So a big shout out to Joshua R. in Malvern, Arkansas. He says the podcast is one of his favorites. The only downside is that after a few months, there are no more episodes that he hasn't heard. But from the Joe and Charlie Big Book studies to Chris and Brenda J. and Scott L., my identification as an alcoholic and my understanding of the steps continues to grow. I can't say thank you to you guys enough for being there for me. But of course, and thanks for writing in. And then we also got another letter from Rusty R. Attached. Rusty's written in before. And last but not least, our friend Rocco. I remember Rocco. Yes, Rocco is the gentleman that I have envy and jealousy of because he has such a cool name. I'm just regular old John. I wish my parents would have named me like Rocco or something like that, or what I had that nickname growing up, but nonetheless, that did not happen. Anyway, Rocco K. from Indiantown, Florida, he writes in and shares his excellent grades from his college courses, which he's keeping up with. Keep up the good work, Rocco. I echo that sentiment there, Mr. Mike. And then he says, so until next time from the snail mail department, peace and blessings, Mike. And then here is the letter from Rusty R. He writes in, he says, well, hello, John M. My name is Rusty R. I remember you, Rusty. And I'm a fellow recovering alkie along for the ride. I just wanted to say thanks for allowing Adam T, episodes 335 and 123, to be aired to us incarcerated members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can see why Adam is a circuit speaker and in high demand. I've had to replay his episode over a few times because they are packed with recovery knowledge and wisdom that are in short supply for these days. If you should ever feel doubts or wonder if your podcast is having an impact on those in recovery, know that it is inside of these prisons. Some days I do wonder about that, my friend, and I appreciate you, Rusty. He says, in closing, months back, you shared with us about a career issue you were going through. Did that ever get resolved in line with our, quote, promises? Please give us a follow-up because others can benefit from your experience, strength, and hope. Hasta la vista, Spanglish. He says, unity, service, and recovery, one day at a time. A Rusty R in the French M. Robertson unit in Abilene, Texas. Rusty, thanks for writing in, man. And, you know, I don't give an update every time. I feel like if I go through every single complaint, I don't know. Sometimes I don't go through the follow-up because I want it to be about the other people that are on the podcast and the guests and all that sort of stuff. But you know what, Rusty? That did resolve itself. And, you know, here's the thing that I've come to realize about that. And that is, I didn't handle that with as much grace and dignity as I would have liked to. A lot of my shortcomings came out, and a lot of my fear came out, and it helped me to realize, even though I have a few days in this program, I'm still a work in progress, and I still get into the fear of the unknown and what may or may not work out, and my mind just goes off on that. So, but it did work out. It always works out the way it's supposed to with all of us. It's just whether or not I can pause and live in the now and not have to get caught up in that. But Mr. Rusty, I sure do appreciate you asking about that. I do appreciate you asking. Mark writes in, and Mark says, the subject line is grateful to you. Well, Mark, I'm grateful to you as well. And he says, dear John, you are on my mind today as I celebrate 13 years sober. Well, God bless you, Mark, 13 years sober. That is absolutely amazing. He said, well, I had not discovered you back in 2011. You and Sober Speak have certainly played a role in the past several years of my life. Listening to you and your guests have given me essential hope and inspiration. The way you pour yourself into the podcast, your full self is so impressive to me. You laugh, you cry sometimes, and you connect with the listeners. People around the globe are benefiting from your dedication and energy, John. You make a difference, brother, and I thank you. Your guests continue to provide nuggets of wisdom on each episode. There are so many terrific guests who've made me think. My personal favorites are the three wise men of Sober Speak, Bill C., Gary K., and Matthew M. Thank you for your good work, Mark. You are most welcome, Mr. Mark. And I like it, the three wise men of sober speak. I'm part of the three stooges. I don't know who the other two stooges are, but I'll figure it out. But thank you so much, Mark, for writing in. Thank you for your kind words. Thanks for letting me be part of your sobriety, or all of us be part of your sobriety. And congratulations on your 13 years. That's absolutely fantastic. Brian writes in, and Brian says, "Hi, John. My name is Brian R., and I've been listening to Sober Speak on Spotify on and off now for about 2.5 years. I'm not in AA and somewhat hesitant skeptical." Sorry, Brian, I understand that. I've been there myself. He says, "I've been drinking 90% daily since my early 20s. I'm now 35. I enjoy your podcast during my work as an electrician. I did not like some of the negative reviews about the Jehovah's Witnesses." Oh, I know what you're talking about. I brought somebody on. They were, I don't know if you call it negative reviews, but yeah, their story regarding the Jehovah's Witnesses and what happened to them. Right. He says, "That was my upbringing, and that's who I give all credit to as far as good things about me. I had been disfellowshipped at 21. I guess that means you're kicked out of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Anyway, says, I lived a wild life, reinstated at age 31 or so, and now I've been inactive for the past 3 years. I am now realizing that a lot has changed for the better. I live in Bakersfield since May 2020 when I got a mortgage. I grew up in Hollywood, and I jumped around in different parts of Los Angeles. When I got disfellowshipped, I wilded out." I don't know if that's an actual word or not, wilded, but I completely get what you're saying. I've wilded out myself a few times, my friend. He says, "I became a motorcycle stunt rider, drank, experimented with drugs, used weed to quit meth, and decided to quit my stunt riding passion to get back on track. Unfortunately, the drinking is the most likely culprit to my roller coaster life and the thing I can't seem to stop. I have two stepsons, ages 15 and 12, and a daughter who is 8 years old, which is how long I've been with my boys for plus some, and then some change. Anyways, this response has no room for my life story, but I'm trying to join your secret Facebook group. For the past few times, I log into the Facebook group for some marketplace stuff. Thanks for what you do. I love your voice, laugh, random joke attempts." Hey, wait a sec. I don't think that's a very nice... my joke attempts, etc. Anyway, he says, "It is March 2024, and I'm currently on episode 129. I have a lot to catch up on. Keep them coming. I'm drinking as we speak. God help me. Love you, John." Well, my friend, love you too, Brian, and gosh, I just pray that God's will be done in your life, and I pray that you pray to God for His will to be done in your life, one step at a time. Keep me posted. I'd love to hear from you again. All right, everybody, that there is another episode of Sober Speak in the can, as they say. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. May God bless you and keep you until then. I take this 1 week at a time. I'll try to be back next week. And until then, love you guys. Bye-bye.